He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is. Giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
This is John Katzimatidis and WABC Radio, and it's the 5 o'clock hour, the number one show at 5 o'clock, and I am away. I'm at the beach. I took one day off, but I worked harder today than ever before. But I want to thank Lydia for pitching in and helping us run the show today. Lydia,
As always, sir.
And we got a full house in there. We have Judge Weinberg is there.
Yes. Hi, John. How are you?
Good. Ed Cox, former New York State Chairman. And Governor David Patterson, how are you?
He's not on the line yet with us.
All right, we lost him. Okay, he's lost in action.
He's calling in, yeah.
I take the first day off of the summer. I worked harder today than ever before. And I just got a hurricane alert on all my telephones. So how good of a vacation day is it?
You're not breathing in that fresh sea air?
It's beautiful. It's a fresh beach air. Remember what I said about the ocean. You breathe in that ocean air, guaranteed you'll live 10 years longer.
John, did you see the press conference with the president of the United States? He lied. He lied to the American people. He said people are not having issues getting to the airports.
It's very, very sad. And I recorded a few shows for our Sunday show today. And at the end of just before the 6 o'clock, we're going to play a few clips as teasers. For our Sunday show, which is going to be another great show. And it's, look, let's pray for America because we want our kids and our grandkids to be able to live to see 2076, the 300th year anniversary of our country. And that's what it's all about. We're here to tell the truth to all the American people. We want to see the United States of America, our country, along with Canada, along with Great Britain, all our NATO countries to survive this. And it's very, very sad for the American people. Do we have a guest on the line?
We just got him on the line. Talk about perfect timing. We have John Solomon on the line with us of JustTheNews.com. He's an American journalist. He is as investigative a journalist as it gets. If there's breaking news, John Solomon is on it. John Solomon, welcome. Again, it's JustTheNews.com. What you got for us, John Solomon?
Well, it wasn't a busy day at all. Just the president talking about Afghanistan and Al-Qaeda and watchdogs raising concerns. It's been a crazy day in Washington. And whoever said news was quiet in August did not go through an August in Washington. The president's news conference is the big news right at this moment. We have him talking, clarifying, because there's been some doubt in people's minds. Are they really committed to getting all the Americans out? Because there have been some unusual answers by his team. The president unequivocally said, any American who wants to come home, we will get you home. They don't have a plan how they're going to do that yet, but they do have finally made a commitment 6 days after they left a lot of ambiguity about that. He said some other things that other people are scratching their head about. Joe Biden said Al-Qaeda is gone in Afghanistan. That's not what most intelligence people are telling me, nor the recent warnings that the Homeland Security Department issued. Al-Qaeda does have a presence in Afghanistan and in Yemen, and it seems to have been activating more. So the president had a so-so performance, but at least made one thing clear. If you're an American in Afghanistan, we're going to try to find a way to get you home.
John, it's Richard Weinberg. How are you?
Hey, Richard. Good to see you. Yes.
Good. You as well. This is my concern. They say if you want to get out, well, how do they know with people remote from Kabul that they can get to the airport? What kind of pathways have we done to secure passage so people can get from one place to the other and be admitted onto the planes?
It is a real problem. And, you know, one of the things we learned in the last couple of days is there have been more Afghans and foreigners on the exit flights than there have been Americans. I think part of the problem is because they haven't been able to identify and get to all the Americans. They withdrew the Bagram Air Base, and they started the withdrawal, and they allowed the Taliban to advance without doing the basic homework of where are all of our people and where should we get them to go that's safe. And almost every expert I've talked to in the last 2 days said the key should have been telling people in small groups starting back in April, get the Bagram, we're getting you out, get the Bagram, because we had this amazing airfield completely secured with all of the capabilities to repel any attack, and we gave that away. And now we're trying to do it out of a commercial airport that has a very bad security posture. And I think the biggest sign that they haven't done their homework, they didn't have a plan, they don't know where the Americans are.
Well, that's just an awful situation. This makes it, thousands of times worse than the situation we had in 1979 in Iran when they seized the embassy.
You're 100% right. And the Taliban has great, listen, Taliban has control of the phone system. They can monitor phone calls now. They're getting help from China and Russia by all intelligence accounts that I've talked to. There is a tremendous amount of capability of the Taliban to intercept our people, make them disappear without us knowing. I hope that doesn't happen. We pray that doesn't happen. But the reality is we created an extraordinary and unnecessary complication to this exit strategy. On the site this morning, we interviewed the person that developed Donald Trump's plan for getting out of Afghanistan. He walked through every piece of the plan. They thought about how they were going to come up with the number of Americans where they were, how they were going to get identify the Afghans and figure out where they are, how they were going to make sure that all the prisoners at the Bagram Air Base would never get released and commit terrorism again. And all of that was rejected by the Biden administration.
John, Ed Cox here. I don't see how he could say that he did not know of any complaints from any of our allies after you heard from after you hear from Merkel.
I guess if you don't pick up the phone, you can claim ignorance.
Well, either he's lying or he's ignorant, and the president should not be ignorant. And NATO's really at risk here. Why should they follow the United States again? After 9/11, they declared Article 5. They put in place. They're coming to our defense. They go into Afghanistan with us, and then we bug out on them at the end. And the ripples from that
communication too. That's one of the things that I've talked to several European allies the last couple of days. The lack of communication. Joe Biden just did things without communicating. You know, if you remember, everyone was with Joe Biden at the G7. He was like, "Oh, America's back! What a cool group!" That entire group that was with Joe Biden, they are not happy with him right now.
Guys, John Katsimatidis, I interviewed Nigel Farage from the UK, the father of Brexit, and the Brits are as mad as hell, and they can't take it anymore because. They could not get a return call from the White House. The White House did not keep them informed. And that broadcast will show in our Sunday show. And it said they never called the Brits. They're our closest ally. They never called any of the NATO countries. I mean, you can't make this up. I mean, this is very, very sad what's going on.
Yeah. And John, I'm going to have exclusive tomorrow morning to go just into this idea of how bad the planning was. There was no planning at all. I got several of the internal memos today from the Customs and Border Patrol laying out how they're doing the processing of Afghan refugees. And the memos irrefutably say, listen, because of the way this rolled out, most people didn't have time to get their papers. We don't know who we're bringing into Dulles International Airport. We're going to have to do extra screening. We're going to have to use biometrics. And here's a quote from one of the people who's doing screening right now. So this is a frontline CPB screener. Direct quote from him. Most are leaving Afghanistan in a hurry without travel papers, passports, or birth certificates. We're flying blind in a proverbial rainstorm with a lot of heavy fog, too. We don't know at first blush if someone we're processing is the seventh cousin of bin Laden or a good Samaritan. It's going to be a tedious job. That's why the lack of planning has consequences. Now we're processing people, and they didn't even have time to bring their papers with them.
John, it sounds like our southern border.
It does, yes.
And all these airplanes that are landing, and I was listening to Lydia's show before, all these planes that are landing at Westchester Airport in the middle of the night, who are these people coming in?
We don't know because the administration won't tell us where they're bringing immigrants. We do know. All Afghan refugees are coming in through Dulles. That's one thing we've been able to confirm here in Washington. That's the only processing point into the country right now. But all the other ones are probably border migrants, and we have no visibility because the administration won't tell the American people where they're sending those migrants.
Well, it's very, very sad times, and it's Americans don't know if they should zig or zag.
Well, it's a terrible national security threat for us internally in the United States, but it also sends a signal to all our allies that we are not dependable allies. You cannot count on us. We're going to bug out. We're going to run. We're not going to protect the people with us. And that's very, very dangerous. You have India has to worry about Pakistan. You have the Israelis has to worry about Iran and the Hezbollah surrogates. You have, at a certain time, you're going to have struggles to try to keep Russian and Iranian and Chinese influence out of that country. And how do you do that now? You don't have a place where you can get real intelligence. Russia's turned down our request for intelligence centers?
It says it better than anyone I've heard. It's just one giant bowl of disaster, and it has not years of consequences, but decades of consequences.
Judge Weinberg, I have a question for you. This is Lydia Serrani, by the way, everybody. Is this not grounds for impeachment at this point?
Well, as we all know through the Trump situation and the Clinton situation, fundamentally the question of impeachment is a political question. And if somebody is not enforcing the laws of the United States, yes, that would be legal grounds for impeachment. Likewise, the southern border.
You end up, but Judge, you end up with Kamala Harris, who might be substantially worse. I don't know. I don't think anybody knows Kamala Harris at all.
I think we have a 3.5-year horror story ahead of us, and it's going to play out, and we can't get it under control. When Secretary Pompeo was on the air last week, we asked him the question, what advice would you give? And he said he didn't have enough information because he's not on the inside, and I respect that conclusion. But it seems to me the basic advice is you have to secure your people to get them out. You have to destroy the weaponry and the confidential secret information. And then, and only then, do you take your troops out. Seems to me if we're going to have a pathway to get our folks safely home, which is the obligation of this administration and this president, if we're going to do that, we may have to send more troops in to secure pathways. And I don't know that they have the courage to do that.
Ed Cox, you had a brilliant observation when you were watching the press conference with Kirby, and I was telling you off mic, but I'll say it now. I have sources there at the White House and the press corps. There is scuttle bugs going around that the reason there was such a delay with them coming out is that Kamala Harris didn't want to come out with Joe Biden. That's why she's been silent for the past 6 days. And you could see her just kind of standing there looking straight across, and you had a great observation about Kirby.
Yes, yes.
So his... You
go ahead.
Say it.
I've never seen that kind of a major press conference where the president just has those people silently standing there to give him that kind of support. It shows he's weak. He can't do it on his own. It was not a good picture for him.
They were trying to do a show of solidarity, I think.
Yeah.
John Solomon, will anybody stand up in Washington from the military and say this is wrong and we gave the right advice and nobody listened?
You know, I think you're going to see someone's going to have to go right soon. This is the classic Washington game. Someone's got to be the fall guy. It won't be the president, right? I'd be watching for General Milley to step aside. He was the figure that had the comprehensive, cohesive plan that Trump left behind, and then he's the guy that executes the lack of a plan here. I think he becomes the first person that pressure says should resign or step aside or fall. We should watch for that. There's no sign of it happening today, but somebody's going to have that responsibility. And he's the most interesting person because he came with a plan and then he executed without one. And I think that's going to be it. Watch these senators in the Democratic states that have elections next year or in purple states. They are sounding almost like Republicans in their criticism of Biden. We've got an election next year, and I don't think these Democrats who are trying to save their seats want to carry the stain of Joe Biden's bad decision here. So some Democrats are beginning to move away from the president for the first time.
Are we going to have hearings on this, John?
Yes. Three separate Democratic Senate committee chairmen, led by Bob Menendez, right in your backyard in New Jersey there, are promising hearings. The most amazing statement of anyone of a Democrat was Seth Moulton yesterday. He's a Democrat from Massachusetts. He used the sharpest language possible to condemn President Biden and his failure and said, listen, you got to just move. You got to stop making excuses. Do something. He's a guy that spent four tours in Iraq, so he knows something about warfare. When a Democrat from Massachusetts is criticizing your Democratic president, you know you've made a faux pas.
Merkel had it right. This was a politically driven exodus. It polled well, and we'll get out by 9/11, a good soundbite, and that's not the way you should conduct your foreign policy, especially a serious thing like that.
Who's now being recognized by our enemies, Iran and China and Russia.
And that's what happens when you do it for political purposes and you're not looking at the substance of the situation.
So, John Solomon, what do we do now?
Well, I think there's three stages of this, right? The first is, can they stabilize the country and get Americans out and our closest allies in the Afghan population do it safely? That's the mission at hand. That's weeks away. That isn't days away. There's a lot there. Then they've got to move very quickly to find out how quickly Al-Qaeda and terrorists are reconstituting in Afghanistan. That is a big fear. General Milley told that to folks the other day.
We're getting all those hurricane alerts, or what are these? Tropical
I'm sitting out here in the beautiful weather getting hurricane alerts.
It's coming right at you, John. Coming right up the Atlantic.
I might come back early to New York.
Listen, I'm on my way out to join you, John. We have a breakfast tomorrow.
Well, maybe after breakfast we should go home, but we'll see.
That's a negotiation with my wife, which I hope I win.
I'm sheltering in place here in New York, John.
Well, John Solomon, thank you for coming on, and we got to talk more often, and because we got to stand up for the truth. Somebody has to stand up for the truth. And thank you, John Solomon. Have a great weekend, and we hope we survive.
Be safe up there.
Thank you. Okay. Let's take a break, and we're going to come back. I believe Larry Kudlow is coming in, but let's see whatever. If Larry doesn't come in fast, then we'll talk amongst ourselves. Break.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Well, we're back. This is John Catsimatidis, WABC, and we have a full studio. I'm on the beach in Long Island waiting for the big hurricane, and who knows how big, but do we have Larry Kudlow on yet?
We got Larry Kudlow.
Larry Kudlow, I hope you're not on the beach anywhere.
No, I'm actually in Fox right now.
Well, you're safe there. You're in a big building in the city. The roller coaster ride with the markets is... What the heck is going on? We know we're in a big jam in Afghanistan, but maybe the investors are saying good riddance. What say you?
Well, look at the Afghan business is a catastrophic failure, but it's not going to bring the country down. It's not going to bring the economy down. It's not going to bring America down. We've been through worse. But it's a very difficult situation. And my only concern, look, the only link that I can find is that the Taliban is a terrorist operation. I don't know if they're going to become the government. They may well become the new government. We won't recognize them. Probably China and Russia will. The United States won't. The NATO countries won't recognize them. The worst part of the story is not only that the Taliban is taking over, but also the Taliban will harbor other terrorist groups. They've always harbored Al-Qaeda groups, either in Afghanistan and or Pakistan. So you don't know, state-sponsored terrorism, who knows, they're going to come after us at some point, but we'll cross those bridges when we get to them. The rest of the story, look, the economy's fine. We're going to be growing at 6% for the next few quarters, I think. The stock market is still holding the high ground. We're at near record highs across the board. And a lot of the economic news continues to be strong. I'm particularly interested this past week. Industrial production was very strong. Manufacturing was very strong. Business CapEx, spending on equipment and technology is very strong. So I like this story. The next big thing at home is defeating the budget resolution and the so-called reconciliation bill, because that has the potential for excess spending, excess inflation, and high taxes, which will do great damage to the economy. I've always argued if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And it's not broken, and they shouldn't fix it. And the fix that's being proposed by the Democrats, frankly, will make the patient worse. So I think the next big battle, and we're going to get some of this week, this coming week, is to see whether they can get a budget resolution passed, whether they can get the infrastructure bill passed. That has to be defeated, in my judgment, and that would be smooth sailing. My only point, John, to the stock market is this speculation about the Fed and the Federal Reserve Conference in Jackson Hole next week, and whether they're going to announce some tapering of their portfolio purchases, which I think they should, by the way. I think we should start winding down the portfolio. And the market may have some temporary jitters, but it won't affect anything. It's the right thing to do. So I'm still pretty bullish about our story. It's unfortunate what's happened in Afghanistan, and it's unfortunate how Mr. Biden and his team has bungled this.
Larry, it's Richard Weinberg. I want to ask you, being an insider at the White House, do you think there'll be a spillover effect, a loss of credibility and influence by the Biden administration in trying to get that bill through Congress?
Well, I think there may be. I mean, I think that's a good question. And I don't know exactly. I mean, you have some moderate pro-business Democrats in the House. There's about six or eight or nine of them. And frankly, without Afghanistan, they have been leaning against the budget resolution because there's too many taxes and too much spending. They are in favor of the infrastructure bill, but they'd like to separate, they'd like to separate the two. So I don't know that Afghanistan has much of an impact on that. I do know that a lot of Democrats up for re-election in tough marginal districts, I think they're going to distance themselves from Mr. Biden. So we'll see how that plays out. I think Pelosi does not have the votes right now, either A, to get infrastructure before reconciliation, or B, to get the reconciliation bill at all. I don't think she has the votes. I'm not sure Chuck Schumer has the votes either.
There's got to be some common sense. There's a lot of common sense Democrats that were scared of the extreme left and they were bowing down. But I think at this point, they got to come to a reality that our country is in danger and America is under attack.
Well, I agree. You would think so, John. And I think there's some of that out there. I mean, look, President Biden's polls are heading down. At a pretty rapid rate. Now, this is a function of Afghanistan, but even before this, you know, the last 6 or 7 days, even before then, his polls were dropping because folks don't want gigantic spending, particularly during an inflationary period like this, and they don't want all these taxes. I mean, small businesses are going to get slammed by the tax proposals. You know, and family-owned farms and ranches are going to get slammed if they start to tinker with the estate tax. And corporations, you know, if you tax corporations, you're taxing the workforce because you're taxing profits. And there won't be enough profits to give the workforce pay increases or to invest in new technology to make the workforce more productive. And so I think there's already a backing away. The question is, how do the politics play out on the floor of the two houses? And I think it's going to be a tough battle. Afghanistan's not going to help that, but I think the battle will be joined mostly on the debate about the domestic economy. I mean, look, if you're growing, I mean, I've always said this, if you're growing the way we are and you have inflation risks, why do you want to launch another spending orgy? I mean, no one in their right mind believes that we desperately need another $6 trillion of spending. No one in their right mind believes that. And I think no one in their right mind believes you're going to tax your way into prosperity or you want to have some class warfare against successful individuals. I think they're barking up the wrong tree. And I think all this wokeism is running its course. I think the country is getting fed up with wokeism and critical race theory and, you know, discriminating in favor of one group versus another. I think this stuff is unpopular.
Larry, one more thing before we have to sign off. The important thing, inflation. And me and you have been going at it for a few months. Do you think it'll taper off? Now the price of crude oil is coming down a little bit. Will it taper off or will it not?
My hunch is we've seen the worst of it. Now, that doesn't mean it's going away. But my hunch is we've seen the worst of it. You're right about oil, John. You're right. Natural gas has come off. Gold has come off. Silver has come off. Copper has come off. But, again, that's why I'd like to see the Fed tell people they're going to slow down or gradually end all their bond buying for their portfolio, because that creates excess money, and that would finance the deficits, and that would be inflationary. So I think the next big hurdle this fall is going to be this so-called reconciliation bill, and whether we're going to have another $6 trillion in spending. Left to its own devices, I think we've seen the worst of the inflation.
Well, thank you, Larry Kudlow. And most important thing, from on behalf of WABC and all its staff, happy birthday to you, and God bless you.
Thank you, John. Thanks to WABC. Thanks to Margot. Thanks to everybody. I love everybody. See you soon.
Thank you. Guys, I'm going to be signing off, too, right now. I understand you're going to have the GOP contender for governorship in New Jersey on, Jack Chitterelli, is it? Chitterelli?
Yep, Jack Chitterelli.
And then you're going to have some tidbits from Cindy Adams, who has a great show on WABC. You're going to have Dick Morris with some tidbits about his Sunday show. And our new star at the 4 o'clock hour, Bo Schnerdley, will be giving a couple of words of wisdom. He's starting Monday through Friday at 4 o'clock next week. Guys, have a great rest of the show, and I'm going to be watching out for the hurricanes, and let's take a break. You guys are in charge.
Thanks, John.
And we go to break.
John Katz and the Demons. 77 WABC.
Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Cats on Night Show. I'm Lydia Serrano here with Judge Weinberg as well as Ed Cox, and we have a great lineup for you coming up. We've got Jack Chitterelli, who is up for New Jersey governor. We have Reverend A.R. Bernard, who's coming up, Rudy Washington. We're going to have Bo Snerdley, Cindy Adams, Dick Morris coming up. So you want to stay tuned because we got a lot more coming up. So we have Jack Chitterelli on the line, and we also have Governor David Paterson on the line. Now, Jack Chitterelli is a businessman who served in the New Jersey General Assembly from 2011 to 2018. He will face Phil Murphy, the Democratic incumbent, and it's one of only two governor races in the nation in November. Welcome, Jack Chitterelli.
Hey, Lydia. Great to be with you once again.
And Governor Paterson, you're on the line as well.
Hello, Jack. Nice to meet you.
Same here, David.
So, what, Jack Chitterelli, what is the biggest hurdle you think, the biggest issue now facing New Jersey residents?
Certainly taxes, taxes, and taxes, Lydia. This is a governor that has raised the personal income tax in 3.5 years in office, raised the personal income tax, raised the business tax, raised property taxes, on top of significant gas tax increases. He's increased tolls. He borrowed $4.5 billion that we didn't need to, that we'll be paying back over the next 12 to 15 years, and increased spending in the budget by 30%, $11 billion in less than 4 years' time. He's mortgaged our future, and as we all know, New Jerseyans face the largest tax burden in the country.
And you know what that means for a small business, because you built up one, didn't you, Jack?
I did. And, you know, there was particularly salt rubbed in the wound this past week when the governor put in place a $250 million payroll tax increase to replenish our depleted unemployment trust fund. Why is the trust fund depleted? Because he continues to hand out unemployment benefits without any checkpoints whatsoever. And so he's sitting on billions in Federal CARES Act Relief Fund and American Rescue Act funds that he's allowed by law to use to replenish the unemployment trust fund. Why in the world, after everything small business has been through, why would you hit him with a $250 million payroll tax increase? Only in Phil Murphy's world.
We're getting taxed out of here. I just don't even understand. Everybody is fleeing the tri-state area because we just can't afford to live here anymore. The tolls alone are ridiculous.
Our property taxes in New Jersey now exceed $9,100 a year. And a recent study done by a national CPA journal said that the average New Jerseyan is paying more than $900,000 a year, $900,000 in taxes over their lifetime. and it's dead last in the nation. So even Massachusetts, which came in 49th place, was $100,000 better than New Jersey.
All right. Jack, it's Richard Weinberg. How are you?
Hello, Richard.
Just one important question. What's your vision as governor of New Jersey?
My vision is to make New Jersey a better place and a more affordable place for all citizens and businesses. And as an MBA CPA and two-time business owner, I know exactly what we need to do to lower our property taxes. We need a new school funding formula. And I know exactly what we need to do to our tax code to make New Jersey a much more attractive place to do business so we create more jobs.
David, Ed Cox here, and I know you did some really special things with the New York budget to make sure you got the budget you wanted. What kind of advice would you give to a Governor Citarelli?
Well, Jack, I think that if you're running for governor right now, strangely enough, I mean, I was the chair of the Democratic Party and I was governor, but I'm going to be a Republican consultant for 45 seconds and give you some advice. And here's my advice. This situation in Afghanistan is such a fiasco that it is going to germinate down to the local levels in our society. And I think that you are going to have to challenge in this race why this evacuation was occurring in Afghanistan, why, if it was going to occur, it wasn't planned, and why the Democratic Party and most Democrats around the country won't apologize for it. The first thing I would have done if I made such a mess as I did, and I made a couple when I was governor, is I got up and I admitted to it. So I think that brazen honesty that you would be asking for could serve you well in this race. There's no charge for my consultancy.
Well, David, listen, no disagreement here. I mean, what's going on at our southern border? What's going on with inflation? What's going on over in Afghanistan? I agree with you. All that does trickle down and influence people's attitudes with regard to the vote. But I'll tell you, the next quarterly tax bill for anyone's home is on people's minds first and foremost. But you're right. It's all the above. And we'll continue to talk about these issues.
Well, thank you so much, Jack Citarelli. Stay on the line with us, Governor Patterson, when we come back. This is Lydia Serrani. We will have Rudy Washington. He served as deputy mayor under former Mayor Rudy Giuliani. And we'll also have Reverend A.R. Bernard, who needs no introduction at all. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Cats at Night Show. I'm Lydia Serrano here with Judge Weinberg and Ed Cox. John Katzmatidis is out on the island and he's finally off. I hope he's going to relax. Do we have Reverend A.R. Bernard on the line? Do we
all today on this beautiful day?
Yes. Reverend A.R. Bernard, are you there?
I am here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Reverend. How are you?
I am doing pretty well. I heard you say that John Katzmatidis is out on the island. I should be with him.
Oh, yes.
You're cordially invited, Reverend.
A.R., it's Ed Cox here.
Goodness. How are you, Ed? It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's good to hear your voice again. So I know you have just a tremendous congregation in Brooklyn. What are the main concerns now that are going on with the virus and all the things that are going on? What are the main concerns?
You know, it's about educating people as best we can to make intelligent decisions about the safety protocols. You know, Brooklyn, as well as New York City, was the epicenter. And, you know, people in our community, black and brown New Yorkers, got hit the hardest and experienced a lot. So there is still a degree of trepidation. So we're about 50% of our congregation who are happy to continue virtual services and 50% who are eager to resume in-person services in September. So we're trying to keep everyone informed and safe.
So have you been basically preaching online and having it's a mega church? And I know they like to gather in that wonderful cultural center that you have. But have you been working online during the virus?
Yes. Fortunately for us, we were already live streaming our Sunday services 3 years prior to COVID. So when COVID came in, it simply meant we had to go full force, change our format. We were able to step up very quickly and present a format that people really got connected to, and they enjoy it and want to continue it. And interestingly enough, you know, unfortunately, we lost, you know, quite a few individuals. However, our reach has expanded globally, and the number of people that we're reaching has increased exponentially. So, you know, it's bittersweet, and we continue to present a Sunday service. So we now have members across the nation and around the world who are part of our 40,000 congregations.
Reverend, this is Lydia Serrano, Reverend Bernard. Tell us about your golf tournament on Monday.
Well, we have been doing this for 14 years. This is our 14th annual golf tournament, and it's a wonderful opportunity for people to get together and spend the day and network. But most importantly, we do it to raise money for important causes, whether it's in education or any other field that we want to be supportive of. This year, we are supporting again Common Grace, which is our philanthropy division, and we ended up feeding over 100,000 individuals last year throughout COVID. It was amazing. Our team was on the ground. We have a pantry in Long Island, a food pantry in Brooklyn, and I will tell you, it was just so needed. And also, we were able to distribute PPE equipment to approximately 60,000 individuals. But, you know, it was quite draining on our resources. We partnered with Somos Health, Northwell Health, and I'm careful not to give too much marketing here, but it was just some great partnerships that allowed us to do what we did, and we're looking to replenish that and strengthen that in as much as we've already hit 75,000 people so far this year.
And I understand you'll also be honoring John Catsimatidis at your awards reception on Monday as well.
Absolutely. He is in the circle of champions, along with Deputy Mayor Rudy Washington, New York Jets player, running back Curtis Martin, Rabbi Joe Vitasnik, who he and I do the Reverend Rabbi Show on WABC every Sunday, and Cheryl McKissack, part of the McKissack Group.
Well, thank you so much, Reverend A.R. Bernard. We look forward. And tell us the website for anyone interested regarding your golf tournament.
Absolutely. They can go to cccinfo.org and just look for where it says golf. Click on it, and they will be in.
Well, thank you so much. And when we come back, John Catsimatidis with WABC's newest star, Bo Snerdly.
New York's news and talk station. Download the 77 WABC mobile app now.
Today, WABC is announcing that we have new talent and a new great person on WABC Radio, and he's Bo Snerdly, or James Golden. And my announcer says, do you want both people on the phone? I said, they are the same person. He was Rush Limbaugh's number two guy, and he is taking over the airwaves between 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock on WABC Radio worldwide. And good afternoon, Bo. How are you?
I am great, John, and I am full of gratitude to you and to this wonderful radio station that I love, that has been such an amazing part of my life. And so I'm just feeling so exuberant, and thank you.
Well, let me tell you something. The mission of WABC Radio and the mission of my mission and your mission is to make sure our country survives and we tell the truth. The utmost important is just tell the truth to the American people and let them know what's going on in our country. And I worry not about me and you. I worry about our children and our grandchildren to come and make a difference in our world. What say you? We're such a big mess right now.
Here's what I say, John. I say the American dream has to live on. And can you imagine? We can imagine what the world would have been like if America and the allied nations hadn't prevailed almost 70 years ago now. We saw what the impulses of the world leaders were. And some of the world leaders today still have those same impulses. So America stands in the way of those who would drive humanity into the abyss. That is part of what America is. But America, and you are the living example of this, John, you have lived this. You have lived the opportunity that America can create for people that are willing to step up to the plate. That's what your whole life has been about. And so we have to continue the America that is the land of opportunity. At the same time, we have to remember that America is still a young nation. When you compare America and our history to the history of the world, we are still the new kid on the block. But what we have to ensure is that this beautiful, wonderful nation, America, lives on for generations to come so that your children, your grandchildren, my daughter, that they can have the kind of country that we have, where they can prosper, where they can feel secure in their own, within the borders of this country. We have so much work to do, but we have also been blessed, and we have to also remember to be grateful for what this country is. And you're right, tell the truth. Now, John, the other thing, the other mission, WABC is the most iconic radio station in the world. And I am so extremely happy that you are making the luster on WABC what it should be. I call it the crown jewel of American radio. WABC is the crown jewel of radio in the world. And thank God, John, that you are bringing it back to where it should be.
Well, welcome home to WABC, the home of your old boss, Rush Limbaugh, that was working at WABC with you for 25 years. Welcome home. Do you miss Rush?
Of course. Every single day, I'm still grieving for him, as of all of us on the staff are. We miss him. It is a void. And I see so many people comment on social media, oh, I wonder what Rush would say about this. Oh, this is, we need Rush. And yes, we do. But we had Rush for 33 years on the air. And I tell you what, he left us a way of thinking about things. And so part of keeping Rush's legacy alive is for us to just kind of remember what his take was on America and on this beautiful country that we live in, and to continue that legacy, to continue to be optimistic and to continue to have faith, not just in God, but in freedom, in family, and faith that the right thing will ultimately happen, even when things look so chaotic and it looks like we're headed toward the abyss. We just have to keep the faith. And I miss him every day.
Well, we're looking forward. WABC, our audience, is looking forward to listening to you every day between 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock on WABCradio.com, 770 on the AM dial, worldwide out of WABC. And God bless you. Also on Saturday mornings between 8 o'clock and 10 o'clock on WABCradio.com and on 770 on our dial. And look forward to working with you every day. God bless you and God bless America.
And God bless you, John. Thank you so much.
Here we are today with Cindy Adams, a great friend, 41 years with the New York Post. She started when she was 3 and a new 10-year contract with WABC Radio. And how are you, Cindy Adams?
First of all, I love you. That's all I can say. I'd be anywhere where you are. I'm on it, WABC, which you have now made number one, but I would be anywhere for you. I love you, John. I think you're brilliant.
Well, thank you so much, and I do love you, too. Now, you have a very special event going on Sunday night, and you are Showtime did a special documentary on your life. Tell us about it.
Well, Ron Howard, who you know is an Oscar-winning producer and director, and we have great respect for him. He had an idea. I knew nothing. Nobody came to me. Nobody asked me anything. He decided he wanted to do a documentary on me. Understand, at this point in life, everyone has a documentary. Even orthodontists, they have a documentary. It doesn't mean anything anymore. So he went to the New York Post. The New York Post would sell out anybody for a buck and a half. So they went everywhere, and they got all of my background, all of my history, all of my 500 front pages, and they gave it to Ron Howard. Then, 6 months later, they all came to me with this dossier that they had, and they said, Now you have to say yes. And that's what when it started 3 years ago.
So there's a special documentary on Showtime. I understand it's four two-hour segments?
It's four consecutive segments. They're 1 hour each. The first one starts Sunday night, at 8 o'clock on Showtime, and then four consecutive Sundays. And the difficulty for us, John, was not just doing it, but the last 2 years, you couldn't do anything. So where could a camera crew get me doing what I normally do? There's no gala, there's no red carpet, there's no backstage, there's no party, there's no gala, anything. So they had to make up the last segment with a little difficulty.
What was a part of your, give us one tip of what's going to happen in those 4 hour segments. Did you tell them the most embarrassing time of your life?
I think it's right now, but I'm not. No, I didn't do of that, but I told a lot of stories about people. Like my, Robert De Niro going into an elevator with him in a Beverly Hills hotel, and a little old blonde lady about 5,000 years old doddering in, and she looks at him and she says, "Aren't you Dustin Hoffman?" And he said, "Yes, ma'am, I am." And, you know, there are stories like that. There are stories where Imelda Marcos, the first lady of the Philippines, I flew to Manila, and her husband, then President Ferdinand Marcos, gave a big party in my honor. Now, to fly to Manila is tiring. It's a lot of hours. And here is this gala party, 500 people. I fell asleep on the president's shoulder during the party. I mean, there are stories that go on endlessly.
Did you inherit the 4,000 pairs of shoes?
No, she had 3,000, and it's a different size. But if otherwise, I would have certainly tried to get it. I would also try to have gotten some of her jewelry. Leona Helmsley, you should pardon the expression, she had a conversation with me one day, and she said, "What is it? Why are they putting Imelda Marcos on trial? I have this in the documentary." And I said, "Because she had mathematical Alzheimer's." So she says, "What does that mean?" I said, "She can't remember where she mislaid $800 million U.S. dollars." So she said to me, "Leona,
give or take $100 million.
How much?
Give or take $100 million.
Yeah, well, like you have. So she said, "Only $800 million. She said, "I have more." There's a lot of this stuff that's in the documentary that nobody else knows, just me. I
look forward to it. I look forward to watching, every Sunday night on Showtime at 8 o'clock?
That's correct, and it starts this Sunday at 8 o'clock on Showtime.
Well, I look forward to it, and for all those people listening to this, Sydney Adams is on every Sunday at 1 o'clock on WABC Radio. .com and worldwide, and also 770 on the AM dial in the New York area. Cindy Adams, God bless you. I love you. Make sure you fulfill your 10-year contract, and I'll give you a 10-year option besides.
Thank you, honey. I love you today.
Love you too.
Bye.
What an incredible interview. Thank you so much for listening to John Katzmatidis' Cats at Night. God bless New York, and God bless America.